We're on a mission to help founders hit product market fit faster. We do this by interviewing founders that have been there. I'm your host, Adam O'Donnell. This podcast is put together by Zendesk for Startups. We offer 6 months free of Zendesk customer support suite for qualified product-oriented companies. Noam, welcome to Sit Down Startup Founder Podcast. Excited to have you here and sharing your story of building Immunite and just your journey of product market fit. But I first want to hear about your personal story. Tell us, where did you grow up and like, when did you first want to become a founder?
Thanks for having me over. So I'm Noam. I was born and raised in Israel. And I actually preferred to be a mathematician. So I wanted to be a mathematician and doing research from very early age, even before I was 10 years old. And growing up in Israel, I went to university when I was 14, 15 years of age. I did my first degree in math computer science before 19. I graduated and then I went to the army, Israel Defense Forces. But luckily for me, I was able to do more of a research software engineering role for a few years. And then I spent more than a decade doing academic research in math and computer science. So I've completed two PhDs and four postdocs. And somehow to complement income, I decided to start working outside the university. I worked as a consultant, then I did a couple of head of data science gigs. And I saw that it's very interesting. It was actually in tech companies in Israel. I said, okay, maybe I should go and do that. And then I got an offer to do a postdoc at Harvard and MIT. So I moved with my wife to Cambridge and spent a couple of years. And then we founded Immunite with my co-founder and my co-founders.
Very cool. Were you cautious or scared about moving to Cambridge, or was that just like, that's exactly what I should do?
It's a very good question because I was actually considering going to Canada to do a postdoc in university over there. But with my wife, we decided which of the opportunities presented at the time was a better one. She convinced me she wanted to go to the US and move to Boston. And I wasn't scared about moving to Boston. I didn't know what I was going to experience, and it was one of the best experiences of my life. So I really love living in Cambridge and Boston. Amazing experience.
That's cool. I interview a lot of founders who've come outside the US and then moved in, and that decision to move is always an interesting one. And I imagine if you get into MIT, it's like, I'm definitely going. but just that, I appreciate you opening up about that.
Yeah, thanks. So it was a question on whether or not we wanted to experience, something, in the U.S. outside our comfort zone. And I think it was clear to my wife and I that we wanted to go there. And it was a very fun experience. But maybe I'll share something about my experience being Harvard and MIT. So growing up in Israel, doing degrees in math and computer science and PhDs. You read a lot of, textbooks and articles of the best researchers in the world, and some of them are sitting in Harvard and MIT, and then you go, and they are super nice, super humble, and you have an amazing experience working with the best researchers in the world, the best postdocs and PhD students. So it's a very humbling experience on one hand because you work with the top of the top, but it also shows you when you create this amazing system, like it exists in Cambridge, so it's not only Harvard and MIT, you have a very large network of colleges and universities. It's such a cool environment for researchers to live and operate in. And it's also great in biotech. We're going to talk about this soon.
That is really cool. The humility among that group, I'm sure was surprising, but that sounds really refreshing.
I think that every researcher in exact sciences like math, physics, and computer science, when you work with the best, you also learn humility because you see how many greatness there is around you. And I most of the top researchers that I know, are humble and are very easy to talk to and get advice from. So maybe it's a bit counterintuitive from the outside, but from the inside, it's very much the case.
I love hearing that. Well, on your journey, right before we start pulling apart your product market fit journey, could you tell me a lower moment that you had in building Immunite so far?
Yeah, I'll share a couple of moments because I'll be very candid. We were very lucky from the beginning. So my promise to my wife was that we were going to go to spend 2 years in the US, and then we were going to come back to Israel, and I was supposed to go back and assume a researcher position in one of the universities in Israel. And I started instead Immunite. And so this was with my co-founder, Luis Volok, and my scientific founders, Dan Littman, Ansu Satpathy, and Danny Wells, an amazing group of people that were very eager to make a dent in, drug discovery and development. But the decision, of course, started after we gave it a try for a couple of months. And immediately we raised the first round of financing, that followed by a second round of financing. So I have to be very candid. We are lucky and we're very fortunate to have people believing in us before we knew what we were doing. But even as we were starting out, I came from a very, I would say clean background of engineering and mathematics. I didn't know anything about drug discovery, about biology, about medicine, and even about management. So embarking on this journey required me to kind of take a very big leap of faith that I would be able to do a good and a decent job at it without knowing that I would be able to. And I think at some point after maybe a year and a half, 2 years, I asked myself, am I going to be the one navigating this company, to success? And I have to say that I've been asking this question to myself every year and every quarter, because I think leading a company requires this, humility and knowing that you don't have all the answers and that you need to make sure that you're the right person for the job at any given moment, any given year. I think for us, actually, after the creation of the company and having 150 people and raising, we raised close to $300 million in financing, the moment of realization that, oh my God, I have all this, responsibility in my hands. What am I going to do here? It wasn't a low moment, but it was a oh my God moment that I have to be very careful in how I manage the money, how we spend the money, how we recruit the best people to manage the company through uncertainty. And as everybody knows, the last 2-3 years were more challenging in the entire tech ecosystem, definitely in biotech ecosystem. And I think we were very methodical in how we approached these challenging 2-3 years.
It sounds like the weight of that kind of set in where you were like, wow, I'm about to steward this type of money and impact these people's lives. And just like, it sounded like a weightiness that you weren't expecting.
Yeah, it's like, you start moving very fast and then you have to keep running even faster. It's very fast paced experience. And you're right that initially you don't know what you're getting yourself into. The responsibility of managing a large team of people, of managing a very sizable budget, on making decisions about who is going to stay, who is going to leave, are we going to develop this product or that product? It's different than doing science or engineering in academia, but it's also very rewarding. So balancing the weight and the opportunity is something that every entrepreneur and every especially CEO entrepreneur does. And to me, it's a very easily a net positive experience.
Yeah. Yeah, but still, that balance is really interesting. Well, in the remaining time, let's help the audience understand how your where you are on your product market fit journey and how you got there, and also just how you view that journey. Because to raise the amount of money, you said $300 million.
Yeah, closer. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've raised that. And I know at the beginning of the conversation, just when we were not recording, it was maybe that you hadn't fully hit product market fit, or it, the way you viewed it was differently. So I'm really intrigued to hear kind of where you are.
Right. So we are a company in the deep science, deep tech space. And I think when you're trying to develop a technology that is based on science that is not quite there, not quite substantiated, you need to have a lot of hypotheses, and some of them are going to fail. In more pure tech companies, the dogma or the expectation that you're going to have an MVP, which is a minimum viable product, and you're going to start selling to customers, and you're going to be able to make decisions on how I'm going to change the product based on what I'm hearing from the customers, which is also true in our case. But because a lot of what we were trying to do was not feasible scientifically or engineering wise, we felt needed to invest for a few years just to build something we didn't know if there was going to be any market for. So I think for companies that are in the deep science space, you need to have, I would say, the right breath of air to kind of say, okay, I'm going to do like this. And I'm not going to decide I don't have what we need in order to have a product market fit. And for Immunai, just to say a couple of words about the company, we're building a platform that can, by mapping the human immune system, we can map the response to different drugs. So we are able to better know how patients are going to respond to new drugs that are not yet approved clinically. And in order to do so, you need to really map the human immune system to an extent where our mapping is sufficiently precise and accurate. And it takes years. Like, we are almost 6 years in the making. And today we already have a working platform and working machine, but every month, every quarter, it gets better. So luckily for us, we already sell to, I think, six of the top 15 pharma companies. We have more than 40 partnerships. And, you know, we are we have a nice stream of revenues. But if you had asked me 2 years ago, when it was just starting to, you know, sell, I would tell you, when you build it, they will come. We had conviction that we need to keep investing in building the engineering, the infrastructure, the capabilities to connect the lab to the AI. And today, compared to where we're going to be in 2 or 3 years from now, there are certain capabilities that we are still building. And myself and the engineering team and the science team have conviction that when this is going to come together, they will come. So there is a lot of belief and patience that need to come alongside with, like, you know, validating the product market fit. And I think this is a bit more unique in developing platforms that take time, that are relying on, like, deep science, deep tech building.
That is interesting. So could you tell me, like, when you first got to conviction for, like, many a couple years ago?
Yeah. So I think one of the first questions we were asked were, okay, so you are building this platform to map the human immune system. And essentially, we are taking from a draw of blood from a patient, we are mapping the peripheral immune system, and we're making predictions off of it. And the question two and a half years ago, okay, you find all these very interesting characteristics of the human immune system, but how do you know they are valuable for the clinical development of the drug? And going from these very early insights into a recommendation or a conviction that we know which decisions you need to make was something that you need to believe in your gut. And we believed in our gut that this was going to pan out. And in 2023 and 2024, we were able to complete very successful case studies with pharma companies that have demonstrated we are able to measure in peripheral blood what will happen later in the clinical development stage. So 2 years ago, we didn't have it. We just had a gut feeling this was going to work out. And today we are starting to have it, and I hope that in 2 or 3 years it's going to be a very long manifestation of successful case studies.
But yet you already have customers now, right?
Yeah.
And so they bought, what did they, help me understand like how they bought and like what you're developing now. Cause it sounds like, did you have like an MVP product that's now being sold and then you're researching, you're building out another phase of that?
Yeah. So maybe a good metaphor would be microscope. So even 3 years ago, we had a microscope and you could use the microscope to look into the human immune system and see and show people what you see in the immune system. But what was not evident 3 years ago was how do you use the microscope to actually make clinically relevant decisions? And the more time we have to develop and mature the platform, the more use cases and recommendations the platform can give as to concrete junctions. And maybe another metaphor that we often use is like having a Google Maps for the human immune system. So we know, you know, how the map from point A to point B looks like, and now we can recommend if you need to go to take a left and take a or take a right. And once we have recommended take a left and you take a left and it was the right decision, we have a case study that shows success and we are generating these case studies. So 3 years ago, we didn't have these case studies. Today, we have multiple case studies and we want to build them, increase the conviction, have like better statistics. Over time, it gets better and better and better.
Understood. So it's like you created the MVP of Google Maps many years ago and companies were able to, that was enough for them to buy now, but then you're increasing the functionality and that's what you're referring to in like the coming 3 years.
Right.
Very neat. So along the way, help me with like it, that sounds so, it sounds so obvious that people would buy that, but did you do customer research, say when you were first building out the first MVP that they've now bought? And what did that look like if you did?
We have talked to customers from day one. In fact, in day one, we weren't sure whether we were going to sell to hospitals or researchers or to pharma and biotech companies. And we realized very early that pharma and biotech companies have a very big unmet need to guide or even just increase the confidence in decisions that they're going to make. So I'll give you a very interesting statistic. From the drugs that are already tested in animals, in mice, and you know, do all the preclinical work, in oncology, only 5% of those that start in the clinical trials are going to get an FDA approval. So 1 in 20 or 1 in 19. The amount of money it takes to develop a drug all the way from early preclinical to the commercial approval is more than $2 billion, and it takes more than 10 years. Remarkably, the return on investment in drugs is usually very low. So, of course, pharma and biotech companies are coming to us, but when we started, we had no idea that this was the case. We wanted to actually guide patients or guide physicians to make the better treatment choices. Instead, we realized that by working with the pharma and biotechnology companies and developing the new drugs, there is a much bigger unmet need. And this Google Maps for the immune system that I've shared with as an analogy, it's something that keeps getting better. And every year we are getting and, you know, demonstrating more case studies for how decisions are going to be made. So the product market fit is something that happens all the time. So if today we have 40 partnerships, every partner is going to tell us, this was not very useful to me. This was very useful to me. I want to pay more for this and less for that. And we're going to take this into account. When you have a growing number of partners or customers, you're able to make better decisions and refine the product market fit.
Got it. You're helping executives who are spending hundreds of millions on continually researching a drug make a better decision to keep going or not, or feel more confident or not about
Precisely.
Those.
Exactly.
Very cool. And I love how like you, it seems so clear and understanding now. It just makes a lot of sense now. What would you do differently, like knowing what you now know on in those early days? It's just an advice for founders who are in that right now.
I would definitely want to create the friction with the market earlier and have more awkward, embarrassing discussions earlier. So I think there is a tendency because executives in pharma and biotechnology companies are very respectable and knowledgeable and even famous people, and it's very difficult to sit in front of them and, you know, ask them stupid questions, but you have to do it. Because those questions that may seem stupid in the beginning are exactly what are going to help you make better product decisions. And I think the thought process of building a product for biotechnology in the way that high tech is viewing product development is something that is not as mature in the biotechnology ecosystem. So spending the time really understanding and fleshing out what do your customers actually need from you, and not what you think they actually need from you. And it may sound a little bit, you know, contradicting what I told you earlier, that for a few years you need to build a capability without doing that. So the point is that you need to have conviction in which capability you can build technically and scientifically, but all the while keeping the friction with the market and guide the way that you have to build the right technical capability. And so there is a very subtle, you know, dance between the two. If you don't have the patience to wait a few years before something is going to materialize, and you want to have kind of constant product signals without having the patience, it's not going to succeed. But if you build something for 5 years and you don't interact with customers, you're going to fail by building a fancy capability nobody needs. So being able to do both is very challenging.
And it's juggling that tension while continuing to listen to customers. I think that awkwardness thing is a great piece, because no one wants to do that. And you want to just like sit and just keep building, but asking those dumb questions is going to help you get there faster.
Yeah, and it's going to conferences with people that don't recognize you and don't want to spend time with you. It's sending cold emails and not getting response. So having the patience and confidence that if this question sounds stupid, it doesn't necessarily mean it's stupid. It means that other people don't view it as valuable. You need to understand why. The patience piece is very important. Also, don't be embarrassed too easily. I think many people in the beginning were, you know, tending to feel, okay, this is awkward. I don't like, you know, going to the meeting, just asking questions. But I think that you should. I think you need to go and meet with executives and just try to understand what they don't have. And if you hear a repeating answer again and again and again, that is a good place to start from. And, you know, as long as you're building the product while engaging in these discussions, you have a chance to build something that is going to be both deep science, deep tech, but also have product market fit later.
That's great. Well, Noam, thank you so much for your time. What's the best way to reach out to you if I'm an early founder? Maybe getting some quick advice, would it be LinkedIn or Twitter?
Probably LinkedIn.
Cool. Same for me. Thank you so much. We'll end it there. Thank you for listening. If you want to learn more about Zendesk for Startups, check out our website, zendesk.com/startups. Also, we're always looking to improve, so don't hesitate to email me with any feedback on how we can ask better questions, guess the target, or anything else that we can do to better help you as a founder. My email is adam.odonnell@zendesk.com.